Hello, and welcome to Viewpoints, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete.
On today's show, we'll be talking about a powerful music production program called Sonar and how you can use it with a visual impairment, in particular using your screen reader. But first, to our tip of the week, and here's Victor Tsaran with our tip.
And I think I, you know, in a way, admire people who have become blind and feel comfortable, or at least try to feel comfortable with technology, because that's not the situation for every blind person. Some people psychologically are unable or have a lot of difficulties just pulling themselves out of that trauma, you know. And obviously, with technology, you have to be a bit adventurous,
right?
Because this is like now becoming a pair of your eyes in a way.
Yeah, I think particularly for older people that go blind suddenly, I mean, you
right.
know, they're not into that. I mean, I feel kind of fortunate that we're kind of geeks. You know, we're both physicists, and, you know, this is kind of fun stuff for us.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. So you treat it as fun, and that obviously helps you to try things and not be bugged down by what happens if I press that button.
Right.
It's a problem for sighted people. You know, lots of older sighted people, they just have the same attitude, like, oh, my God, do I need to click on that button? What happens? Now imagine if you can't see that button, that's probably even an additional thing to worry about.
You know, as Victor mentions, there's a lot of people, particularly older people, who didn't grow up with some of these technologies, that using a computer or some of these different gadgets and stuff is a considerable obstacle to them, right? And it's difficult. And sometimes you just need to get over these things. And all it takes really is a little playing around. You have to be a little persistent and a little inquisitive about what is going on. But particularly for a blind person, I think it's important to get these technologies in hand and really work with them to your advantage, because you can use them for you know, many good purposes. I mean, I think learning computers, for example, for a blind person is just a great access tool. You can access the internet and documents, email, and you can do virtually anything anybody else can do.
Why, just this evening, we had another couple over for dinner, and they were saying, well, how do you learn how to do this? How do you learn how to do that? And they weren't asking Pete, how does he learn? They were saying, well, I want to learn how to do something. How do I learn that? And, of course, Pete comes up with his famous phrase, let Google be your friend. You know, search for whatever it is you want to learn about, and you can learn about it.
Well, in fact, we had that happen the other day with a friend of mine who was trying to use Cubase, which is a music production software, and he had a heck of a time learning to use Cubase. Went through the documentation, couldn't understand the interface. I tried to give him some advice, although I didn't really know the program. I knew the concepts, and that wasn't helping at all. And I finally told him, well, why don't you go to YouTube and look up help with Cubase? And he found a step-by-step tutorial that just took him through it screen by screen. He was really pleased.
Right. And especially if you're blind, you know, like Pete said, you can go to the public library. Well, maybe you can't read those books, but anything that's available on the computer, you have equal access to. So that's great. Well, that was a little more of Victor Tsaran, not speaking, but playing the guitar.
That's pretty music, isn't it?
It is. Turning now to our low-tech item, we'll meet Victor Tsaran. He's a leader of the project to make Sonar accessible, and in fact, he used Sonar in producing that track. He does a lot of computer work professionally, and he's also a musician and does even more computer work at home to enable himself and many other people to use Sonar, a music production program. So let's meet Victor.
Hi, I'm Victor Tsaran. I lost my sight when I was 5. I think it was a result of glaucoma. That's at least the official version, so I have no sight at all. Most people know me as a person who curates the JSonar project. Professionally, I lead an accessibility team at one of the largest internet companies, Yahoo. So I work on making web more accessible for everyone, I started out as a programmer, but increasingly I'm becoming more of a manager because now I have several people on my team. I do like to tinker with code still because I think it's an important skill to have in case if you lose your job. But I like programming, so whenever I get an opportunity to stick my hands into the code, I definitely do so with pleasure. Besides that, when I'm not at work, I play music, I record music, I make music software accessible, such as JSONR, and increasingly so, hopefully on the Mac.
Can you describe your music a little bit?
So music is a difficult thing to describe, but I guess you have to describe your music, because otherwise people don't know if they want to listen to it or not. I'd compare it to a mix between Pat Metheny and some bossa nova influences. In general, it's pretty lyrical.
Do you write your own music also?
I write music for most of my tunes, and then my wife writes lyrics. Whatever you hear me sing in English, that's my wife's work. On that last album, actually, Vanilla Fields, there is one tune that sung in Ukrainian. Interestingly enough, some people thought it was French. I was like, okay, whatever. But it is sung in Ukrainian, and that's a poem by one of my friends from Ukraine who is a poet. She wrote lyrics, not specifically for that tune. I just took her one of her poems and made it into a song.
Are you originally Ukrainian yourself?
Yes, yeah, so I am from Ukraine, and I came to the States in about I think it was 1994. That's where I was born, and that's where I started at the university before I came here to the States.
I met Vic on the MIDIMAG list, which we've talked about on this show before. www.midimag, that's MIDIMAG.org. And basically what that is, it's a distribution list for blind musicians. Some of them are producers, some are performers, some are hobbyists, some are professionals. And I've gotten lots of helpful hints and have also helped other people on that list. So it's a nice way of people around the world sharing their knowledge and experience about access of various tools, how to do different things with a visual impairment, and just music in general.
Just another example of the web being a huge help in learning stuff. And in this case, it's learning from each other.
Yeah, it's interesting. Victor and I actually have pretty similar backgrounds when you think about it, right? I mean, I was born with congenital glaucoma also, which is the cause of most of my eye problems these days in one way or another. And I also enjoy programming and programmed for many years at Xerox. And as I moved up the chain, of course, you get more management responsibilities. And after a while, I was managing a group and didn't quite get to do as much programming as I wanted to either, although I, you know, tried to on the side. And, you know, I still keep involved in that stuff. And like Victor, I'm also enjoy playing music and writing music on the side. So it was neat meeting him on the MIDIMAG list.
And it was really interesting talking with him in the interview. Among other things, he had some comments about learning Braille and how important that's been to him.
Lucky for me, I actually learned Braille and still use it quite a bit. In fact, Braille is one thing that helps me multitask. Because, sighted people can multitask by listening and looking at things, but we can actually multitask by reading Braille and listening at the same time.
You know, I'd never thought of that before, but Braille is a great way of multitasking, so you don't have to, interrupt things at meetings and things like that. I used to use Braille a lot to give presentations. I would write Braille on little index cards and keep my notes that way, or I had a Braille note taker at meetings when I needed to take more extensive notes so I didn't have to interrupt people by, speaking something into a tape recorder or something like that. And it was actually kind of fortunate I learned Braille almost by accident, because when I was a kid, I used to see a little bit better. I used to be able to hold a book just several inches from my nose, but I actually went to a school for the blind, and the Braille has come in useful throughout my career and, the rest of my life.
Well, and don't forget the Braille watch, where you can check what time it is during a meeting without appearing rude. You can just hold the watch behind your back.
Time to go!
You are listening to Viewpoints.
This week's focus topic is Sonar and the JSONR project. Sonar is a professional level tool that is used for recording, mixing, and mastering audio. We talked with Victor about the history of Sonar and how he and a worldwide community of volunteers collaborated on the JSonar project to make this complex program and its graphical interface accessible to people using the JAWS screen reader. The JSonar scripts, in conjunction with the Hotspot Clicker or HSC sets for Sonar that we discussed in show 1137, make almost every function in Sonar accessible to those using JAWS. So here's Victor describing Sonar and giving a bit of its history.
Sonar is a product by 12 Tone Systems. Most people know them as basically just Cakewalk. Now I think they're part of Roland. But essentially, there was an old product called Cakewalk back in the 90s, and they would just provide ability to record MIDI and also manipulate MIDI, which was a big deal back then on the computer because you could connect your keyboard and you can make your computer make sounds that it wasn't supposed to do, it wasn't made to do. And so these guys from Cakewalk came in and wrote this software. Eventually they realized closer to the end of 90s, they realized that MIDI obviously wasn't enough and they needed to do something more. Mac was pretty strong with Pro Tools. In fact, they've captured more of the sound studios. So many of the sound studios would be using Pro Tools and Mac and things like that. And so they came out with this product called Sonar, which was now not a MIDI recording software, but it was primarily an audio recording software plus the MIDI component that they already developed before. So essentially Sonar turned out to be a PC recording software that let you plug in. If you were a home enthusiast, you could plug in your guitar and record music. If you were more adventurous, then you could plug in software synthesizers or use some plugins to transform your sound, and you could still be recording music. But, and then the complexity increased, and they let you record not just one track, but you could record 100 tracks, 200 tracks, and then you can mix them down. You can add some effects and do all kinds of transformations and essentially create a professionally sounding music. Sonar has gone through transformation from Sonar 1, then Sonar 2, and now I think it's like up to version 10. And every time, with every version, of course, they would increase the capacity and the feature set and the functionality of the software.
How long have you been using Sonar?
I think I've been using Sonar for about 10 years, because I think I started with Sonar 1 and then all the way up to, I don't have Sonar 10 yet, but all the way up to Sonar 8.5.
So as Victor says, Sonar is a very sophisticated program. There are lots and lots of options. This is not a program you're going to learn overnight or just use casually, but you have to be reasonably serious about what you're interested in doing. It takes a long time to learn, but you learn little by little. I mean, that's what I did. I got Sonar a few years ago, started using it, plugging in my MIDI keyboard to play stuff into Sonar, and then eventually I'd plug in some acoustic instruments and do some mixes. And as Vic said, there are many plugins, which are actually things like different effects you can plug in, like different kinds of reverb, compression, and the kinds of standard things that people would do in audio production. Or other kinds of plugins may involve software synthesizers. So if you don't have a synthesizer that has particular sounds, you can buy some software synthesizers, play your keyboard into the computer, and have different sounds come out depending on what software synthesizers you have on your computer.
So the next time you go listen to some music and you think you hear somebody playing the oboe, they might not have been.
Yeah, or the drums. A lot of those drum tracks are just made up, aren't they?
Well, right. But what the heck, it works, and it's the musicianship and the end result that really matters.
Right. There's still a lot of artistry left to do.
So now, Sonar is really complicated. There are a million buttons and capabilities, as Pete said, and if you can't see, you need to run it with your screen reader. So we talked with Victor about the goals of the JSonar project and what motivated him and others to develop the JSonar utilities.
We want people to have that as seamless experience as possible without having to worry about these graphical symbols and things like that. Because, when you have to earn money or when you have to record music, the last thing you need to worry, you want to worry about is technology. Unfortunately for us, it's not that clear cut. We still have to worry about technology, but the JSONR goal was to reduce that amount of worrying to as little as possible, so you could concentrate on music and not worry about, oh my God, you know, how do I turn on that thing or turn off that thing.
So Pete, can you describe what JAWS scripts are and how you would use those with Sonar and in JSONR?
Oh, sure. So JAWS comes with a scripting language, which is like a little programming language associated with JAWS that allows you to have JAWS do some custom things that it wouldn't ordinarily do by default for certain applications. So by writing custom scripts for Sonar, Vic and others, many of the developers, were able to make many of the functions of Sonar work with the screen reader, the things that wouldn't be accessible out of the box.
In the early days, Sonar was a relatively simple program and didn't present many access difficulties. But as the program became more complex and graphical in nature, this became more important.
As the Cakewalk was transitioning into Sonar, one of the big changes that happened for us, for us blind people, was that the complexity of the graphical interface became way beyond what we've had to experience before with music software. With Cakewalk, it was pretty simple. If I remember correctly, the layout of tracks was such that it would look like a spreadsheet, and you basically use left and right arrow keys to move back and forth and up and down arrow keys. So it was just like a spreadsheet, and you had to move around to tweak things around, change volume and change pan and move up and down the tracks and things like that. So the more complex graphical interface meant that we now had to deal with much more stuff on the screen, finding things on the screen. And this is where idea of JSONR came about. In fact, JSONR originally started as just a bunch of scripts that were written by someone named Gordon Kent. He's known in blindness community as the guy who not only does music, but he teaches music. He's a sound engineer himself and happens to be also a JAWS scripter. He put together a set of scripts for Sonar because he wanted to use Sonar for his own work. I started using them, and then suddenly I started tweaking them, and then one thing led to another, and these scripts became more and more powerful. Then I came across this guy from Australia whose name is James Te. And Jamie is now known as one of the lead developers for NVDA screen reader. And Jamie did a lot of work to, because Jamie obviously is a much more talented programmer than I am. So he helped sort of to start looking at JSONR more as a serious project as opposed to just a set of JAWS scripts. And so Jamie did a lot of cleaning up and making it look like a serious programming project. So actually it was when Jamie joined that we started thinking, oh, we probably need to name this thing somehow. And we thought of a couple of names, Sonaris and some silly stuff. And then somehow the whole idea of JSONR came about. It was as simple as just saying JAWS with Sonar, JSONR.
Victor mentioned a couple of the people who were instrumental in getting the JSONR project started, but as you can imagine, the JSONR project has grown and grown and grown, as has the list of contributors to it.
And so Jamie stayed with Sonar for about, I would say, until about 3 years, two or three years ago, until he realized he needed to move away from JAWS and work on NVDA. And I was maintaining JSONR since then. And since then, we had a couple of other people joining in, like you, Pete, and we had Phil Muir, we had Tim Burgess from the UK, and we had Victor Gorello from Russia. So then the project had all kinds of contributors from all over the world.
You know, as Vic mentioned, the JSONR project is a big project. I mean, there are thousands of lines of code by this time. And one thing that's really neat about it is it was really well structured from the beginning. So it makes it very easy for a number of contributors to actually add, modify, and fix problems in the program. Having a good structure up front is a really big thing, and I enjoy working with people who code cleanly like that. It makes it a lot easier.
And I think it improves the end result as well.
Oh, absolutely, yes. It makes it easier to, you know, debug and run and more extensible and flexible for the future. As we go into future versions of Sonar, it ought to be easy to incorporate some of those changes.
So if you're interested in signing up for the distribution list about JSONAR, you can go to freelists.org. I'm going to spell that because it's hard to enunciate. F as in food, freelists.org/list/JSONAR. And you just enter your email address, choose subscribe from the list of actions, respond to the confirmation request that you will receive in your email, and you should be good to go, all set. And you too can start working with JSONAR and Sonar.
And if you'd like to download the scripts or read more of the help documentation and what people are doing with the JSONAR scripts and Sonar, JSONAR also has its own webpage. It's jsonar.org, JSONAR.org. The webpage has recently been under flux and been moved, so maybe not all the links are working, although they might be by the time you hear this. And you can also find ways of subscribing there to DLs and helping out with the project, or just downloading the scripts and using them.
Well, that was Victor again on the guitar, and as you could hear, there were a number of other musicians involved. These included Luis Elorza, who Victor referred to as the mastermind behind mixing, mastering, some arrangements as well as playing, and Rory Hoffman, who played keyboards and sax. So let's turn to this week's high-tech item, which is accessibility concerns with Sonar in the future.
As Vic talked about earlier in the program, these programs, as they develop over the years, they become more and more sophisticated and often move from using text-based ways of describing things to more and more graphical ways of doing things. And one issue that's come up with Sonar in particular in terms of accessibility is the latest version, Sonar 10 or X, the interface has changed dramatically, and this has made it not possible to use the current scripts with it. So people do worry about, you know, how much work has to go into changing the scripts to make it work with the new versions of Sonar? Is it possible? How much support will you get from Cakewalk in terms of making it more accessible or giving the scripters more hooks into the program? So Vic talked a little bit about that.
So I think there may be some concern in the community about JSONAR either being abandoned or slowed down or whatever. Because I will honestly say probably for the last year or so, maybe even more, there has been almost no changes to the JSONAR code. There have been some really small changes, but nothing significant. Part of it is because of the wonderfully structured code that actually, I think the code is so great and so granular that we had, with very few changes, we could move from one version of Sonar to the other without really changing much at all. I think since version 7 or 6, we've been pretty much relying on the same underlying structure that we've built, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago. So that's how good it is. And so this was great. But when Sonar 10 came out, partially for my personal reasons, because of more workload and things like that, but partially because I found that Cakewalk wasn't giving us as much attention in terms of accessibility as we got before. So we sort of got tired of constantly working around their issues that I sort of got discouraged in some way to continue the project. And so I'm still maintaining it. You know, we're still, you know, hope that the project is going to live. But really, at this point, it would be great if there was, you know, more attention also from Cakewalk so they help us with a couple of things we're asking really for years, you know, do these couple of things and we may never need to bother you again.
So we'll see what happens in that regard. I think there are a lot of developers who have worked with the JSONAR scripts, like myself and Vic, and that are kind of sitting on the sidelines to see where Cakewalk is going with the UI and what kind of additional hooks they might provide to make it a little bit easier for us to access some of the new ways that Sonar is doing things.
And maybe one of the things we can do as a blind community is to really step up to the plate and let Cakewalk know, you know, that we've been really loyal customers and we appreciate everything they have done, but we need more. We need the company to take active stand and not just sit around and wait for a couple of blind programmers, you know, patching up their things for them. It just doesn't seem to be fair.
So Vic and I went on to talk about some of the accessibility issues with Cakewalk and Sonar, and then we talked about some of the other options. You know, as more programs are developed and there's more competition out there, more options for people, there actually may be some other alternatives for visually impaired folks to use some audio production software and not have to develop custom scripts and put in a lot of work up front. In particular, I mean, as many people know, the Macs are very accessible these days. VoiceOver, which is their screen reader, is sort of built in from the ground up, and it's a very controlled operating system, so many of the programs work pretty well with the screen reader. The Macs come with a program called GarageBand, which gives you many features for recording audio and mixing and things like that. And that just comes free with many of the Macs. And I think there are actually iPhone versions of that. I think Vic and others are playing with that to see how accessible they are and actually making music that way. If you want more complete solutions on the Mac, there are more professional versions of production software like Logic. And there are several versions of the Logic program that enable you to do more sophisticated audio production and stuff. Another option that's become available on the Windows platform recently is a program called Reaper. This one, you got to be a little bit more of a geek to get involved in there, but it's very accessible. And there are tools called Ray Access that actually provide even better access for people using screen readers. So there are other options out there, and you just got to pick the one that's right for you.
And then go make great music with it. That's it for this week's show. Next week on Viewpoints, we'll be playing some highlights from 2011. It's the end of our first year, and we're really excited about it. We'll feature some highlights and play some favorite clips from prior shows, as well as some listener comments, and just kind of wax nostalgic. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to reachout@wxxi.org or call us at area code 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Viewpoints, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. This program was hosted by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey. We hope you'll join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show by going to our website at wxxi.org/reachout and clicking on the podcast's link. Thanks for listening to Viewpoints, and have a nice day.